This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Alex McKeithen was a junior at Davidson College in the late 80s when all hell broke loose. It was actually the apocalypse, or so he thought. He'd gone to Paris to study painting, was having a good time, and was feeling inspired. So inspired, in fact, that he went running through the streets of Paris, stripping off his clothes at various cathedrals. He thought that he had become the seventh angel of the apocalypse and that his job was to spread the news of the end of the world. Turns out McKeithen was having a manic episode. He had undiagnosed bipolar disorder, and after that incident, he started a journey to get the help he needed. That journey is the focus of his new memoir, The Seventh Angel. Alex McKeithen now lives and works in New York City, but he's here in North Carolina promoting his book. Going to be at McIntyre's Books in Farrington Village Saturday. But first, he joins us in the studio. Welcome, Alex. Good to have you
Thanks
here.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Take us back to Paris and tell us what was happening with you at the time.
Well, I had spent a summer with the University of Georgia in Tuscany, and it was the summer of The Joshua Tree by U2, and I listened to that I had a Walkman. That's back when they had Walkman, which I'm doing talks at colleges and universities around the state, and these kids don't know what a Walkman is. Like, yeah. Maybe out of 62 people know what it is. I listened to the Joshua Tree over and over, and it's very cryptic, melodic, hypnotizing, and it also has like lyrics that you could easily equate with like revelations, like I see a kingdom when all the colors bleed into one. So the Joshua Tree was the biggest influence on me. I did make it up to Paris, and I did discover while I was in Paris that I thought I was the seventh angel of the apocalypse. And that happened within about a month of coming to Paris. The euphoria started in Tuscany, and Paris put me through the roof.
Make that link for us, euphoria and delusion that you were feeling.
I think the whole thing is a progression, and there were two times in Tuscany when I closed my eyes and I said a prayer to what is going on, what's happening with me, and I opened my eyes and there was a dove flying in front of me. Well, I'm not sure what the difference is between a dove and a white pigeon, but I'm sure someone could tell me. But to me, it was a dove at the time, and to answer your question, there is a break between euphoria, mania, leading up to an actual psychotic break. And the psychotic break is when you've left reality and you do things like take your clothes off, and because of the beliefs you've built up. And I hope with this book that we will be able to, I can inform people of what some of the symptoms are, and maybe they can catch it before they get the euphoria through the roof.
And when I think of bipolar, I think of these two poles, this shift back and forth. When did you come down? How did you talk about the other side of that?
Well, it's good to be back in Durham again. This is where I was healed. This is where I healed and where I found a very good psychiatrist at Duke University. I was on a locked ward there for 4 months, which is a really intense amount of time, and also very restrictive of being on a ward all day is very, very hard. We took like walks into the Duke Gardens, which are really nice, but that's only a half hour out of the day. It's very hard to kill 4 months. In that way.
Well, talk about what was happening in Paris. I'm wondering how much of it you remember. Were you literally running through the streets? You were taking.
I remember everything.
Yeah.
I think it's. I call it a flashbulb memory, and that's an actual term. And it's like if you do something that is incredibly outside of your normal routine, you're going to remember it. Like if you like tennis and you beat Rafael Nadal, you would probably remember every point and savor it. You know. So that's years from now,
yeah.
This happened 25 years ago. I forgot to mention that when I was 21, and bipolar mainly strikes people in their early 20s. So I think it's important to hit the universities and the colleges and the kids who are right in the crosshairs.
How did you know you were in trouble? Did you crash and become depressed, or did somebody have to tell you?
Well, I knew that. I ran naked through the streets. I made it to the Arc de Triomphe. I was tackled by the gendarmes there, the guards at the Arc.
Yeah, but remember, at this point, you're the seventh angel of the apocalypse. So
that's
they're
true.
Doing their job, but you're doing yours, right?
That's exactly right. And they, you know, they brought paddy wagons. They put me in one. They tried to get in touch with, you know, my father, and I couldn't remember his number. And he has the same number now as he had 45 years ago, 46 years ago. And your brain is so scattered. I knew that my mission was to bring in the final day of the apocalypse. And that's all I knew. I didn't think about the fact that I was out of bounds or, you know, suffering or sick or ill or whatever you would call it.
So when you get here to Duke, you're clearly suffering. You've had a psychotic break. Did your doctor know right away that this was bipolar and not schizophrenia?
The doctor immediately was not sure whether it was schizophrenia or bipolar, but he very quickly favored the fact that it was bipolar.
How common is that to have these to have delusions as part of bipolar disorder?
It's very common. It's a lot of people. I just picked a really good spot, the Arc de Triomphe. A lot of people go running with no clothes on in Kinston or Wilson or some other small place, and they know the policeman. The policeman takes them home, and they might get some hospitalization. But I just happened to pick the center of France. And I feel lucky about that because I got the book out of it. I don't think it would have been the same without – have the same impact without such a – all the doctors I've had, psychiatrists, I've lived in Germany, Netherlands, and other places. All the doctors I've had have said that it's the best episode they've heard. So it had to go down in a book.
By the way, it's the best story they've been telling ever since.
Right, I guess.
So you want to be at their cocktail parties to hear this story retold. But here's so on the other side of this, I mean, do you have moments of deep depression? Is there what's the other pole?
I have depression. Like? I do. And I don't get much in the way of the upside of the illness. It's more, I think as people age, the depression is more a part of the illness that you experience.
So when you're experiencing these things, is there a trigger? Have you learned now that, for instance, the euphoria of being in a place like Paris is something that triggers this, or is it on a kind of cycle?
It is cyclical. There were triggers in Tuscany. The sun is amazing there, and the sun has a lot of the Tuscan sun is even more hypnotizing and sends people into euphoria more than the sun other places. And just the fact that, you know, kids at that age are at the first time that they're independent of their families and, you know, even going abroad of their college. So it's there are a lot of things working in the favor of someone having getting manic, you know, getting higher.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it can be charismatic, and you can actually do some good things if you're not breaking stuff in the process or getting arrested, in your case.
That's true.
It changed its name. It was called Manic Depressive Disorder. It's now bipolar. What's the significance of that, and tell us about that transition.
I favor the term manic depression because I think it's a lot more realistic, and it shows how intense the illness can be. You know, the manic and depression is much better than I say that bipolar is clean and squeaky clean and too clinical, but it is bipolar, so I have to go with that, and I use that term.
You initially, I think your doctor suggested that the problem was alcohol and said just knock off the booze and you'll be fine.
At Duke?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't drinking much at all back then.
Yeah.
Alcohol does cause problems, has caused problems in the since then. If I go out in New York and I have too many beers, I can become, you know, like I think I'm the best pool player in town and I can get really angry with someone quickly, but it hasn't happened lately and I have cut it back. So
is there a relationship? I mean,
there's a definite relationship between the alcohol and the, actually with lithium, I take lithium and that's the main, it's just a salt from the earth. Mm. And lithium is the major one that, you know, brings you back to reality. And
And that just keeps you in balance. That's the
keeps
idea.
You in balance.
It's a right. mediator that keeps things without it.
So that's why you're not supposed to drink. Yeah. It lowers your lithium level.
You talk about in the book your unhappiness with the way public media, popular media, have portrayed bipolar disorder.
Right.
Tell us about that.
I like to go and talk to the students and be a true example of what it's like to be a bipolar person. You would not know that I had an illness or anything if you saw me at this complex here. Most portrayals of bipolar, I feel, are damaging. Everyone told me to go see Silver Linings. It's got bipolar in it. I went to see it and I was disgusted by the main character who wears a trash bag down the street. He throws a book through an attic window. And you find this on shows and in books. Law and Order has some. I've had problems with Law and Order's depiction of bipolar, and people look pretty normal. They don't go running down the street with trash bags on, and it puts a stigma, and it maintains and holds a stigma that people have about, you know, this mm-hmm. as a mental illness. And I just think that it would be hard to. It's hard for me to accept it as the portrayal of what a bipolar person looks like and what they do.
This is the kind of thing you're talking about. Silver Linings Playbook, the lead character with bipolar, he's actually reading Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway, and he just doesn't like the way it ended.
What the fuck? The whole time you're rooting for this Hemingway guy to survive the war and to be with the woman that he loves, Catherine Barkley.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Pat.
And he does. He does. He survives the war after getting blown up. He survives it, and he escapes to Switzerland with Catherine. You think he ends it there? No! She dies, Dad! I mean, the world's hard enough as it is, guys. Can't somebody say, hey, let's be positive? Let's have a good ending to the story?
Pat, you owe us an apology.
Mom, I can't apologize. I'm not going to apologize for this. You know what I will do? I will apologize on behalf of Ernest Hemingway. Because that's who's to blame here.
Come on, man. Cut him a break. Lost Generation, World War One, big effect on him. Hemingway, anyway. Yeah. But you ran naked through the streets of Paris, and that's
yes.
not normal. I mean, that is a kind of an aberrant kind of thing.
Well, the problem with what's Bradley Cooper with his. Okay, I did, but that was when I went through the roof and had my episode. He's been in the hospital for 8 months, yeah. and he comes out, and immediately he's still, you know, this crazy Looney Tunes guy. And
you're under control now. You feel you're under control.
I feel great. I have enjoying a great deal talking to people, and I do live in New York, and I wrote a book, and I've worked at studios firms. I'm a graphic designer, and
medication and therapy.
No more therapy, medication. I have a great psychiatrist up there, and he kind of, you know, talks with me every time I go, make sure I'm, you know, level and doing well.
It's a great story. Thank you for sharing it with us, Alex.
Thanks a lot.
Alex McKeithen, author of the memoir The Seventh Angel, going to be at McIntyre's Books in Farrington Village Saturday, 2 o'clock. We've got more information for you about the book and his appearance at WUNC.org. That's the state of things for today from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.